Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Stacia, this is United States Marshal Catherine Walsh. She's the boss.
Delighted to meet you. I've seen you so much on the TV. You're really very lovely in person.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm going to take Sam away from you.
Regular or extra crispy?
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, and welcome to Film Sack, episode 565. Mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, and this is Brian. He's the guy in the freak chicken sample suit, Dunaway.
Original or extra crispy? Oh, hi.
Hi.
So I guess we're doing this again then. All right. Another middle-aged man on the run being chased by a middle-aged marshal man, except this time we're going to make it more believable because the man on the run will be an ex-special agent man with actual skills to disappear. He's going to disappear in superior cosplay talents, like stapling a wig to his bald scalp. That thing is really on there. Anywho, I forgot to pee-pee before we started our two-hour prison flight, and I really got to go pee-pee. Like a really long sit down and pee pee and maybe a little poo poo. Oh, look, I found a pea shooter in the teepee while on the pee pee trip that turned into a pee pee poo poo amount of time on the open air prison plane transport toilet. Stop looking at me, guard. I'm trying to do my business back here. Oh, yeah. I bet you guys are regretting those seats in the back right about now, aren't you? Talk about cruel and unusual punishment. Courtesy flush? Never heard of it. Here, let me open a window. Jesus, Mary, and Joe, shit. I hope I land somewhere soft like a bathtub. Randy, are you up for some ogre wrestling? Nerds!
Oh my gosh, I forgot about him already. That's
nerds!
Great.
Nerds!
Great as usual. Also with us, Randy Gumbo Tub Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. Good morning, and thank you all for coming to the On the Run Symposium. I'm your host, Dr. Dick Kimball, and I'm pissed off that I don't even get a mention, not even a passing reference on a background television. Seriously. Okay. So you're all here because you're on the run from the law, and those pursuing officers are always about 20 minutes behind you, like all day, every day of your fugitive lives. So I'll make this quick. You need to follow my three easy rules for fugitives. Number one, when you're on the run, you can always rent a room from an Eastern European sounding person. No questions asked. Apparently, some government body has like provided these down-low landlords in every city. Number two, just before they close in on their target, federal investigators always stop to put on funny costumes. See that sign spinner over there dressed like the Flash? And right across the street from him, there's a Chick-fil-A cow. Those are feds. Number three. Wait, where are you going? I haven't gotten to number three yet. I was going to... It was going to be about modifying your hair to make you completely untraceable. Man, why do they always kick out all the windows? I'm going to have to pay for these damages.
That's right. Got to pay for that hair, too. Man, that hair was stupid looking. But the minute he showed up at the... Was it a funeral? Yeah.
Yeah, it was at the funeral.
Yes, looking like Soul Glow.
It was so ridiculous. I'm like, hilarious. I wonder if he's out of place. Weird.
Right.
All right.
But we're going to talk about that wig some more. Yeah. It's got to come up again.
It'll come up again. Also with us, Brian, he poked his head out of the swamp to see if the cops were still coming ibbit.
True. Okay, Nurse Carol, I think we've got Mr. Wilkins finally settled into his room here. You know, sometimes it's not easy being the residence manager at a New York assisted living facility, but it's days like this that really I feel like I make a difference. I don't know why Mr. Wilkins insisted on an eighth floor room overlooking the train platform, but I'm sure he likes the view, except for that pulley system hanging off the side of the roof. You know, a pulley system on the roof of an assisted living facility. I've just spent the last 3 hours helping Mr. Wilkins carefully organize all of his belongings. Every single one of those things has a story. You know, Mr. Wilkins was telling me that he used to be a police informant, but that some bad things happened, and that he vowed that if he were ever in a room with a police officer who did something illegal, he wouldn't rat them out, no matter what, even if he saw the illegal action clearly. Anyway, I hope his son's having a good day. You know, he works at the local Walgreens stocking the shelves of the foil wrap motion sickness medicine.
Son of a...
Wow.
Sir, stop opening those.
What an internal connection. I didn't catch that.
It's like
a little
like lore. Yeah.
Some background lore.
I'm glad you stayed there because there was a lot of story there. And each room was a question.
What's the dude doing with the ironing board in the bathroom?
Yeah. I guess that's the thing he has to do.
We were talking about that on today's show.
That was really weird. Speaking of weird, well, we need to get this out early, so let's just say it. U.S. Marshals is the movie. This is the follow-up to last week's episode where we watched The Fugitive. And I contest this is a spinoff. Dunaway says it's a sequel.
It is a sequel. I'm with Dunaway. Yeah.
Okay, so we got Team Gibbet and Team Deluxe Away.
Who's the star of The Fugitive?
Tommy Lee Jones and to Samuel some degree Wesley Snipes.
Who's the star of The Fugitive? Somebody else.
Oh, sorry, the first one. Harrison Ford.
Somebody else give the right answer that I won't.
Harrison Ford is the star of The Fugitive, so a sequel would involve Harrison Ford.
I agree.
I disagree. I think Samuel Gerard has always been the, you know, I mean, yeah, he's the guy. He's the guy.
If he's your guy, he's got to be first in credits. Okay. He's got to be the biggest pitcher on the poster.
Okay, Brian Ibbett, who's the star of the first The Godfather?
The Godfather?
I can't remember his name. Yes. it's The Godfather. It's Don Corleone.
Sure.
Marlon Brando is the answer. Who's the star of The Godfather Part 2?
Right.
A young Don Corleone.
Yeah. And the reason that it changes there and is okay still is because you're talking about a bunch of time passing. That's okay in a sequel. That's not what this problem is. It's a continuation
of the same story of The Godfather. This is not a continuation of the same story of The Fugitive.
Right.
It's a new story featuring characters that were introduced in The Fugitive, but a totally different story.
100% correct. Brian is right about this. You guys are both stoned and
Wait, you're taking Brian Ibbett's side? Well, 100%. In that case, I've been totally corrected. Apologies.
That's what you already said to begin with. Yeah, no,
You can't determine that your partner has made the final statement. Boom. That's it. Mic drop.
All right, hold on. Dunaway, give it. You got the stage. Make your argument for this being a sequel.
There's no argument. I mean, Samuel Gerard was the primary character in the first one as well as here. He's the one that's going to repeat.
He's not even on the poster. What's the name of the movie?
It's not The Marshal.
It's not The Marshal. And by the way, he's not even on the front poster. He's not on the poster. It's all Harrison Ford running on a by a train.
That's because he's the fugitive.
Yeah. There's no way you actually think this is a true sequel.
I'm just glad that we proved definitively that the sequel movie does not have to star the star of the original.
Randy said it. Boom, my partner's right.
Okay. All right. I'll give you this.
I'm actually really sympathetic to your argument. There's an article on Den of Geek from just this year, which calls U.S. Marshals the 1998 sequel spinoff of 1993's
Fugitive. Way to middle of the road there. Freaking pick a side, Den of Geek.
But no, that's the thing. It has a question mark on it. So yes, you can
think of another example.
Either way.
I can think of one.
Like, I'll think of one that you would love, Brian, because you love MCU movies, right? Okay, you would say, Ant-Man and then Ant-Man and the Wasp sequel, right?
Sure.
But you would never say Ant-Man and the Wasp Endgame sequel. even though there's all this connective tissue, characters, other things to think about and consider.
No, after Luke Skywalker dies, all those rest of those are spinoffs.
No,
all other movies.
No, that's my point. That's my whole point. Is that that story is the saga,
continuing thread.
Yeah, yes. The Skywalker saga is that story, because you could say that about
the
prequels.
So the next
one
that comes along is going to be a spinoff.
Yeah, not a spinoff, okay. but probably its own stand. Like you wouldn't say Solo is a spinoff.
Rogue One Solo, great example.
Well, yeah, you would say Solo is a spinoff and prequel in the Star Wars universe. You wouldn't say it's a sequel or a direct prequel to anything.
I just want
to. I'm saying that the line is blurry, and I think it's fine. Yeah, to see,
and that's the thing.
Way.
Like, I don't really feel like we need to unpack the English language.
Oh,
so
no,
much.
We are not moving off of this, like, until
you know
we
what I'm
all
saying?
Agree.
it's like if I say Tokyo Drift is the third Fast and the Furious movie. That's pretty good. That's like we kind of got Ibbot, it. You know,
Ibbot is the antagonist juror that will never let us leave.
Well, okay. You know what? I'm glad Randy brought that up, because actually Tokyo Drift is an example I can get my head around. It is sequel spinoff. Like, it is kind of that weird thing.
Is the Minions movie a sequel to Despicable Me or a spinoff?
Spinoff. 100%. And that's exactly the right example. Thank you very much. That's it.
Yeah. Those Minions are very prominent in the first movie. Yeah,
the problem is there's many examples on both sides. And so
Don't weasel word this.
I just Googled the phrase Despicable Me sequels list, and I got bad news for you.
Website's going to.
Because we're.
No, what? Information? No, thank you. I do not want information.
Because what we're talking about is how general people, the public, the listeners of this podcast, how do they say things? What do they refer to it as? And like, it's fine. You can call it either. It's totally fine.
Yeah,
it's everything is relative. If you see this as a continuation of the Samuel Gerard character, and if we were contextualizing, is this a sequel to Samuel Gerard's character? Then I think yes. If you want to say as a continuation of the same story, then maybe you could say spinoff, because you could say
like, no. There's no maybe.
But like
you
I said,
would definitely say
it gets
spin-off.
Blurry. Yeah. It gets blurry.
I think it's really sharp and easy to see. You know what? Here's another one. I'll say the Toy Story movies versus Lightyear. You wouldn't say you'd call that a spinoff, wouldn't you? I would. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a spinoff. Even
you
though
win. You beat me. I will never call this a sequel again. There we go. All right. Can we go to lunch now?
Yeah,
my
God.
Pick me up a sandwich with some sprinkles.
I'm excited to hear. Mainly, I'm just excited to hear what emails we get, because people are going to have all kinds of opinions on this.
That's what I love. I love when we have these.
That'll be great. This is Stuart Baird. He directed this one. He did. That was not who did the last one. And he's fine, I guess. You know, I don't know. Stuart Baird. He's a dude, makes movies. I can tell you which movies.
Sequels or spinoffs?
He makes a lot of sequels and spinoffs and original content. He's mostly known for editing, which is crazy because, you know, we'll get to it later, but our big Star Trek connection here is he directed Star Trek Nemesis, but he's known for editing everything ever, like Superman, Casino Royale, Skyfall, all the James Bond stuff for some reason.
Oh, wow.
Outland, Lady Hawk in 85, way back in the day.
Lady Hawk.
Lethal Weapon, Die Hard 2, Last Boy Scout, Radio Flyer, Tales from the Crypt, Demolition Man, Maverick. It goes on and on and on. Legend of Zorro. We've seen some of these movies. He edits everything, but he only directed like three movies. Not even all movies.
What's wrong with that?
A good director, like I've heard that a good director is often a good editor, like that they've got to get in the editing bay and like really have a firm grip on what they're doing.
Yeah.
So like it doesn't surprise me, but that's a lot of movies. You just named a lot of movies.
Yeah, it's a ton.
From a long period of time too. Jeez.
Yeah. From 73 up to 2022 and a new one in production, he's still editing. And stuff like Tomb Raider and Across the River Into the Trees, which I heard was good. Bitter Harvest, 47 Ronin, Salt, Edge of Darkness, Casino Royale. I could go on. I could go on.
Yeah.
And this, by the way, this is the first movie written or credited as writer to John Pogue, who, of course, we will see again on FilmSack. He also wrote the screenplay for Rollerball. He wrote the screenplay for Ghost Ship. Remember Ghost Ship?
Oh, Ghost Ship.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I liked Ghost Ship. That was fun.
I liked them all except for the chopping.
Yeah,
chop, that was. Chop.
You didn't like that? So this guy, his last film he directed was Star Trek Nemesis in 02. It was U.S. Marshals in 98, which we're talking about today, and then Executive Decision in 96, which we've also seen. That feels like the right pedigree for this dude to do U.S. Marshals after Executive Decision, I would say. Don't you think?
Yes, for sure.
Executive Decision is like
the
same movie.
And I just want to answer the original question. Who are the stars of The Fugitive? That would be Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones. Yeah. Who are the stars of this movie? Tommy Lee Jones, and I'm sorry to say, not Wesley Snipes.
No,
he is not the star of this movie.
Nope.
No, which is to the film's detriment. If you ask me. Like it's, you know, we cared about both Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford in The Fugitive. We just care really about Tommy Lee Jones in this one. I don't think we even really care about Robert Downey Jr.
He annoyed me in this. I didn't like him at all in this. And this is right before his final drug arrest. So this is right before he got clean.
Once again, we're watching a movie that's kind of old now. Yeah. It feels aged. And the thing that really ages it the most is we've seen all of this Iron Man stuff for so long. And now you're suddenly like, who's this Iron Boy? Like, it's like,
he's so young here, right?
Very young. He apparently hated hated everything about the production. But again, this is during his kind of drug period. So who knows what that means?
Probably hated everything.
Everybody's back in terms of the main people, except for, as we said last week, LaTanya Richardson Jackson takes over one of the roles as a character named Cooper. They spend a bunch of time in the South. Joe Pantoliano takes off 50 coats and just is normal now.
I love how he's went. This character really changed a lot. I thought changed a lot because this time we get a more personal look at what he's into. He's into fine cigars and track suits, and he's trying He's trying to pass this off to everybody else too, and Tommy Lee Jones just isn't having it.
Yep, he's just not taking it. But he was fun.
He goes from wearing tons of jackets himself to buying jackets for others.
Yeah, exactly. But I felt like those two had more chemistry than they did in the first one. There was just more between them, and needed that because they had that whole thing at the end when Tommy Lee Jones is hell bent on revenge, and Joey Pants is like, you know, you taught me. You're going against everything you ever taught me, and there was like this moment of like, oh yeah, right. These two are more closely tied than we saw in the first movie.
Yeah, they always operate as a team up until this point when he gets the character Samuel Jarre gets anxious because he just lost Nomad.
Yeah.
And he's like putting space between him and his group.
Oh, yeah, spoiler, Newman dies. Yeah.
Joe Pantoliano has my favorite little bit from the behind the scenes. Apparently, everyone hated that they filmed on location for the swamps. It's not swamps. The lake stuff.
Oh yeah.
The whole crash and everything was supposed to take place in Southern Kentucky. They did some filming in Kentucky. They did some filming in Tennessee. And Joe Pantoliano said, when the studio sends you a basket of mosquito repellent, you know you're in for a tough time.
Like, yeah, and he was the one spraying himself too.
Yeah.
Spraying himself down.
It is nasty, man. Ugh. I've been down there in the summer. It's especially in the swamps, it's real bad. But
By the way, those scenes were shot on Real Foot Lake, and that was that is a place that has been in other movies, notably the 1967 In the Heat of the Night was shot there.
Oh, that's a good movie. Really? Such a good movie.
Sidney Poitier.
Rod Steiger.
Rod Steiger. My favorite Asian actor, I have one, is in this. A favorite Asian bit actor, because he's never like the main dude, but I love Michael Paul Chan. I'll watch him do anything.
And they called him Chin here. Chan to Chin.
Yeah, yep. Chan to Chin. Mm. And he is kind of a merciless sniper killer guy. Yeah.
Okay.
I love him in this. I love him in all things, though. He's great in everything.
He is. And I wish they had used more of him and gotten some explanation. Do you remember last week when Brian Dunaway said it was still a little convoluted on the story, the backstory? I don't really know what exactly went down. Boy, this movie doesn't care if you understand what's happening at the briefcase exchange where people get killed. Yeah. Like, it just does not care.
Money and top secrets.
I still don't know. I still have zero idea what any of that was about other than he had to shoot in self-defense and he got out of there. That's all I know.
Yeah. It gets confusing later on. Sheridan, the character Wesley Snipes is playing, is on an assignment exchanging briefcases. And then he's attacked by a second set of agents who he did not realize were also agents. And so the Chinese mafia is involved.
And it gets a little weird. It happens underneath the UN. Do you think really we would, our agents would go do a drop at the UN parking garage? That's weird.
Yeah. Why not?
The problem here is that you've got Wesley Snipes in the role of the fugitive and the movie never uses him, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like even in, you're talking about Michael Paul Chan, Scott, even in the airplane, where Wesley Snipes should get a lot of screen time because he's present. It's not. The guy who's about to attack him actually is the one you see the most.
Yeah, what's that dude's name? Not detect. There's
he was
three.
Part of the Chinese mafia as well. Yeah. He had that, what do they call those kind of pin guns? What are they called?
Pop gun thing.
Zip gun. That's it.
They have three. So there are three prominent Asian characters in the movie, which
they call them the Chinese. They keep calling them.
They just call them the Chinese, except for Detective Kim, played by Donald Lee. They called him Detective Kim. So he's fine.
Yeah. Right. So the guy in the plane was played by James Xie.
Yeah.
And he's been in like a lot of animated stuff, Kung Fu Panda, Avatar.
Yeah. Okay. This Michael Paul Chan guy also, I think, in Kung Fu Panda. He's just great. I don't know if anyone ever saw, what's it called? Major Crimes? Okay. Major Crimes is not a very good TV show. It's just a procedural, got a great cast. But at the end of the day, I mean, listen to this cast: Mary McDonald, G.W. Bailey, freaking love him. Hmm. Yeah. Let's see, Raymond Cruz, like tight, that guy. amazing cast, but it's a procedural like your grandma watches. It's one of those. Mm-hmm. But
grandma, Michael, are you watching those procedurals again?
It's her programs. But Michael Paul Chan, he's just part of the detective group here. He is above and beyond everybody else in this thing. He's so good.
Scott, do you remember Michael Chan in Arrested Development?
Yeah, briefly. Wasn't there long,
He was a judge.
Yeah.
I cannot place this.
I can see it.
I feel like I've seen Arrested Development three or four times and I cannot place him.
Guy's very busy. Been in everything. Voices in The Simpsons, Arrested Development, like you said, Boomtown.
He was in Batman Forever with Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, was he now?
Yeah, he's one of your Tommy Lee Jones connections. Let's see here. I'm trying to. I actually wrote that down somewhere, and now I can't find it. Oh, here it is.
Is he in Batman and Robin? That one.
That's it.
Oh
no, yeah. Batman. Or, Forever.
No, Batman Forever.
Yeah,
Batman Forever.
And he was in Goonies. So Joey Pants and Tommy Lee Jones played an antagonist, while Michael Paul Chan played a protagonist in both of those films. So I forgot Joey Pants was in freaking Goonies. That's crazy.
I never forget.
Yeah, right.
When does it have a friend?
Different movie.
Different movie. Same lady. Different movie, same lady.
Yeah. But you can picture her saying it in Goonies,
She says it in every movie, I believe. I love her. I think she.
I love her. She's. Yeah. When did we talk about her recently? She died and all that? She died.
I think she's been
dead for decades. She died and all that.
Oh, here she is.
Robin doesn't have a friend.
She's amazing. She's amazing.
She is.
We miss her. Anyway, that's not the point. The point is, go ahead, Granny.
So we start with another stakeout where they're closing in on their suspects, these U.S. Marshals.
Yeah.
And yet another opportunity for Tommy Lee Jones to be ridiculous in a costume.
Yep. The chicken part is pretty dumb. It's dumb.
And among the people they're closing in on is Donald Ogre Gibb. And he is, you know, he is the perfect cast for this role. And I was so disappointed that was it. That was it.
They had a quick interview later and they said that because there were two brothers and they vowed revenge. And I was thinking, oh, so I guess that's going to be the next one. They're going to come back and do something. We actually did see him. He was on the plane too.
Yeah.
He didn't want to get in the water. The part that disappointed me the most was they set up this scene where he's watching wrestling and he's getting all pumped up. If you've ever watched professional wrestling on TV, and I'm like, why was there not like a 5-minute scene a la They Live in that hotel, in that apartment room? So why didn't they just go to town? They should have had Ogre wrestling. I would have liked more of that.
Ogre's brother is played by Tony Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
And it's so interesting to me that he walks in. He's like, I got to check on the baby. The baby's crying. And he walks in and gets himself shot and killed because there's a shotgun in the crib. So, yeah. Okay, for starters, shotgun in the crib. Amazing trope. That's an amazing trope.
I love that, especially when there's a baby right on top of it. I love
yes.
that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good
yes, trope. But it's like this whole thing, all of that was put in this movie so we can see Tommy Lee Jones in a chicken suit. That is it. That is the yeah. only, yeah. None of it has a payoff.
It's supposed to be a priest.
It was actually pretty effective. It was pretty effective because, I mean, it really did fool me as an audience member seeing the chicken out there. I'm like, okay, cool. And then the physical acting and emotion of him dropping the stuff and, you know, start taking it serious and the stripping of way. It was actually.
Well, they agreed with you. I have not seen this movie before, and I knew that was Tommy Lee Jones.
That's 2022 Ibbot
speaking. Sure, that's true. Who's seen all this stuff before. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
To me, it was pretty.
Well, hold on a second. So the actual description of this is pretty great. In the original script, Sam, Tommy Lee Jones, was introduced dressed up as a priest. So Stuart Baird and costume designer Louise Frogley, it's a great name, didn't find this interesting enough. So they came up with the idea of the chicken suit. Well, okay. Yeah. Was that the only other idea? It's
interesting, I guess.
Yeah. Didn't seem that interesting, but whatever. Priest would have been fine. I could have gone with priest.
So in the first movie, we had already seen them pull this thing where they all pretended to be drunks. They dressed up like homeless people, right?
Yeah.
And so like this makes sense, right? You know, like, you gotta like people who are watching this movie have seen the first movie. Like that's just all there is to it. You're not making this movie if you don't expect that people are coming to see your movie because they saw the first one. And so like you gotta build on what you've got, but it just felt like. I don't know. It just felt like so much, you know, like just you're starting with this excitement and he's in the chicken suit and everything, you know, and then he's just like, I hit him in the head. And now we're, oh, great. Now we have the boss coming down hard on him for hitting the guy in the head. I'm like, I don't know. There was just something about it. It all just fell. So it felt like it was not part of the right movie.
That brings me straight to this. We got to answer this question right here.
Grab a bucket.
I think there are multiple people in this movie you could say are chicks in the bucket, but I 100% put my vote behind his date at the ball. She showed up for that.
Oh, the newscaster. Newscaster.
And then never again.
Got just disappeared.
That was it.
Yeah, you'd think that he'd maybe, you know, use her as a resource for something later on in the film, like, oh, well, she knows about this, so.
Right. And is she like a third his age? Like, what the frick? That was weird. Like it was just a weird moment of like, oh, okay, so he's
a chick on TV in a bucket.
I like how they kept Tommy Lee Jones's romantic relationships at this distance. I mean, you kind of think maybe like the head lady has also got like something going on with him, and it's just like this mystery of. Who's he dating?
Who's the head lady? Oh, the
blonde
director of her name. I'm blanking our name right now.
Director Jim Jab. Let's see here. It's
Jim Jab.
Head lady is the actress and her character name.
Kate Nellington? That's not her, is it? Yeah, that is her.
No. Is it?
Yeah, that's her. Kate Nellington.
She's so far down the list.
Yeah, she is down the list, but that is her. She plays Walsh.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Walsh. That's it. Yeah. Seems nailed
nice.
It.
Seems
she's
nice
Kendo American, according to IMDb.
What's Kendo American?
Kendo American, which she's from Ontario. So I've never heard the term Kendo American for Canadian.
Canadian. Oh, that must be what that is.
Okay.
Canadian
there you go.
American?
Randy, any familiarity with the term Kendo American?
That's weird.
I've heard Sino-American, like, I don't know. I've never, this is a very strange little thing. She is so underutilized. Everyone is. I'm complaining about that with like Wesley Snipes, blah, blah, blah. But she is like, there's a real serious pile of tropes here for the boss lady who, you know, like, and like, you get a little bit of her. She comes down heavy on him. But then like in the middle of coming down heavy on him, she just says, I love you.
Yeah.
By the way, weird. I was looking up Kendo American, and the first thing that comes up is a tweet from Michael McKean saying, is this a common term or do they mean can do American? And the screenshot that he's taken is the exact IMDb thing that we're looking at for Kendo American.
So maybe it's just some weird thing that maybe it's a typo or something, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe it's weird.
Maybe it is Maybelline. I don't know. Could be. Everything comes down to Maybelline in the end.
Yeah.
There's a note here that says Wesley Snipes really dislikes shooting scenes when he's in the water.
He does, which is hilarious because he has that whole turtle head poking out of the water thing that I love so much.
I guess he hates it. He just hates swimming, hates water, hates all that. So
that's fine. That's fine, Wesley. That's fine.
Whatever. I have a lot of weird fears. I get it.
Is Wesley Snipes the prototypical actor for Film Sack? We've seen him a bunch.
He's in here a few times.
This is our ninth Film Sack movie.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
Holy shit. What? Blade 3. What else did we see him in?
Blade 2.
Passenger 57.
Oh, yeah. Demolition Man.
What's the one with the parachute?
Of course, Drop Zone. Of course, Drop Zone.
Drop Zone, yeah, mm-hmm. That's it.
He was in Rising Sun. He was in The Expendables 3, which I bet you not a single one of us remembered.
No. That movie's
expendable.
In
Future Sport.
Yeah. Future Sport.
I really liked him in The Demolition Man. I thought he really shined there.
What I'm asking is he perfect for Film Sack because he chooses mediocre movies, or mediocre movies choose him? Is that the thing?
I don't know.
Probably the latter.
I think he's an action star, and action movies take themselves seriously, and that makes it hilarious whenever they kind of age. It's always funny.
If you want to see... Go ahead.
When you look at his film history, what is the film that we would say, oh, that's too good for Film Sack? Would it be White Men Can't Jump? Is there something that he's done that we're like,
no, we should absolutely sack White Men Can't
Jump. For me it would be
Clothes Alone are worth watching it for that.
To answer your question, mine would be Dolomite Is My Name from 2019.
He was extremely good in that.
That surprised me because we hadn't seen much from him in a long time. He'd been dealing with his running from the law for tax stuff and all that. And kind of just, you know, his movie appearances slowed way, way, way down.
Yeah.
But he's great in Dolomite. That movie's great.
Yeah, he is. And I'm just looking through the rest of his list here. I mean, there's very few things here that I would say wouldn't fit well on Film Sack. So then I think you say, yeah, he picks things like this that maybe he feels like he'd have more freedom with or.
Yeah. I don't think Wesley Snipes does a bad job here. I just don't think he's got a lot to work with. It's just, there's just the characters. It's not well written. It's got this weird, I mean, like in the first one, they tried everything they could to make us feel empathy or sympathy for the Kimball character. But here it's kind of like he seems to be very selfish. Like he's dragging Marie along, using her wherever he can, allowing her to, you know, be captured. And it's just like, I don't know. It just, there's not a lot of, the character itself doesn't seem to be written.
And that's why I think this film fails, is that you don't care about him as much as you cared about Richard Kimball.
In
the future. By a lot. You actually find yourself caring about his girlfriend more.
Right.
Yeah.
But she's an interesting character, and that's to the film's credit. The film somehow makes her an interesting character, and like you're like concerned for her. Like when they finally swarm in on the two of them in the graveyard, and she like tells Wesley Snipes to go, and she'll like basically turn herself in to delay them. Like that's like it's really good. She's great.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
she's making all the sacrifices, and he's just kind of like trying to get away, but he's damaged goods, right? Because he's been betrayed. And so I'm like, why not explore that a little bit?
Yeah,
instead, we get him sitting on a train going away.
It was just surfacey, that stuff.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because I agree that that's part of the missing. That's what's missing here. And imagine, well, I don't have to imagine. I remember feeling this way back when I first saw it. I loved The Fugitive, felt like it was a perfect action movie at the time. And then I moved on to this and went, oh, no, you're getting all, you don't have this right. Like, you're missing, something's missing here. And it isn't, you know, Tommy Lee Jones or all his cronies. They're all doing great. They're fine in this. What you're missing is, I don't know, the other part. And the other part was Harrison Ford and The Fugitive.
It can't be any of the processes going along or the trip itself, because the trip is exactly pretty much the same. And that's the reason why I always think of this as a sequel, because it uses the same formula. In a spinoff, you usually don't use the exact same formula. But I mean, we have everything here where it's like, oh, here comes the prison transport. Okay, here comes the something that upsets it.
Here's the, here you know, Tommy Lee Jones has him pinned where the only way out is to jump off the thing that he's on. And
And that paint by numbers is okay if it's great, right? Like if you're basically remaking the movie And you're just like, okay, so we have to have the feature stunt where he jumps off. Okay, so we had him jump off the dam. This time we're going to have him jump out of a six-story building. You know, like, it's that's great if it's great. And some of it is, actually. I think that stunt where he jumps out of the building is freaking great.
Yeah, there's some
it's
good
as
stuff
good
like
as the dam jump, in my opinion.
I agree. But I also wanted to say that I think that the movie gets really thick in the middle, and there's no reason for it. Like, it doesn't need to be. Mm-hmm. It starts out pretty strong, but then it gets
You know why, Scott? Because in the paint by numbers, they didn't want it to be exactly the same. So instead of the actual head bad guy being the fugitive's best friend, they made him Tommy Lee Jones's work buddy. And that right there has to take a lot of explanation. You really have to spend a lot of time coming to understand that Robert Downey Jr. is the real bad guy. Like, man, it's just like, it makes no sense. And they never make sense of it.
No.
It's just like,
no, you're
and once again, it's like, why bother murdering him when you can just have Tommy Lee Jones take care of the situation? Why do you keep trying to interfere? Just let Tommy Lee Jones do his job and it's over. It's done.
Then you're done.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Like, I guess it starts to look, to Royce's perspective, it starts to look like they won't ever catch Sheridan, right? Like, he gets more and more desperate because Sheridan keeps escaping, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
By the way, only time I felt anything was when they killed.
Oh,
they killed Newman.
Yeah.
What?
They killed Newman.
How could you kill Newman?
Well, you know, he was. How else? What other close relationship is there that's meaningful in this movie? That's pretty much it.
But we're talking about paint by numbers. We're talking about paint by numbers. Yeah, Newman's death is exactly like Dr. Kimball's wife's death.
Right.
In both cases, he can't really say the name of the killer.
You're right.
In time. Why would you do that exact same trick?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Paint by numbers, baby.
Okay.
this is exactly the same. You're right. I remember being annoyed for him, though, because I'm like, this guy's putting pressure on your wound that made the wound, and you just can't
see exactly. Yeah, he's holding the rag on you.
And I'm with holding the rag on you. I love that he pointed out the fact that old man keep his mouth shut wouldn't say anything. I'm not involved.
Exactly. I just watched the entire thing go down, but I'm just gonna sit here with my oxygen mask on.
Yeah, because he was willing to say that the dude's in here now.
Right.
So why wouldn't he be
on the he was on the ceiling. I love that. I do love that. You know what kind of strength it takes to hang out on the ceiling?
Oh, jeez.
For any amount of time.
Yeah. I don't think Wesley Snipes could hang out up there very long, honestly.
I'm a spider.
He's what's his face, Phoenix?
Spider Snipes.
Mm-hmm. He's having a moment.
His character's name in Demolition Man?
That's right.
Martin Phoenix.
Simon.
That's right. Simon.
Martin Phoenix.
Wasn't there a Simon joke, too? Simon says, oh, God.
Yeah, probably was. Right. By the way, this is the same year as Blade, so big year for him.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He did so much better in Blade, but that character was written a lot better. So.
Oh, dude, Blade's awesome. Freaking love Blade. Original Blade. Holds the hell up. I don't know how they're gonna. I mean, the remake. I am too. They need to be really. They need to be not Disney about it and get gross with it.
Yeah,
because it's a violent thing, man. That comic is not does not pull punches. So don't do it with your MCU edition either.
Mm-hmm. But before we get too far away from Newman's death, can I have a trope alert?
Yeah, I can give you a big fat one right here.
Oh, this movie has the heroic BSOD. The hero experiences a complete shutdown because of something that happens. And it is one of the best. Like, this is one of the best heroic BSODs I've ever seen. He is just like, and Tommy Lee Jones looks it. He really genuinely looks like he is just completely checked out.
He looked really pissed
for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, that dude's a top-notch actor. So all this is elevated with him, I think. Beyond where it probably should have been. But yeah, he looked genuinely like when he died on the way over to the hospital, his countenance changed and became like a whole different dude. And all I could think of was like, well, yeah, you're Tommy Lee Jones. That's why they pay you the big money.
Yeah. I haven't seen a switch like that since Stallone flipped his hat that time.
there's tons of examples of this, but the one I always love to go to is in The Fifth Element. In The Fifth Element, there's a moment when Lilu is investigating a bunch of encyclopedias on a computer.
Oh, yeah.
And she gets to war, and she just shuts down. She's just like, no, I'm not a hero anymore.
Yeah, she doesn't want to do it.
That
isn't
good for absolutely nothing.
She should have said it again. Yeah.
She did say it again.
Multipass.
So real quick here. Sorry. What was I saying? I forgot what I was saying. He's only MCU. Robert Downey Jr. is only 10 years from Iron Man at this point, which is a weird thing to think about.
Oh, wow.
He grew up a lot. Yep. He went through a whole rehab and everything, so he grew up a lot.
10 measly years till he was one of the biggest movie stars in the history of ever and made more money per film than for a while there. He was at number one, more than Cruise, more than anybody for a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that's that way now, but good for
him. He's actually 10 years from his final stint in rehab at this time. Mm. Five years. I can do math.
Yeah.
You math. 5 years. So like, this is a long time. 5 years, man. Imagine.
Yeah.
Like it's known, like there's in the behind the scenes, all kinds of people talking about how he made the filming very difficult. Like they had days where they showed up to shoot scenes that involved him and he didn't show up. And like they had to just let's do it the next day and see if he shows up.
Yeah.
And like they put up with that, but it was still another 5 years. That blows my mind.
Yeah.
I thought Wesley Snipes looked a little too happy to be holding Robert Downey Jr. by the neck.
That's what it was. He's just trying to get a little revenge on him. I could see that. It seems like Snipes strikes me as somebody who I wouldn't want to work with, and I don't know why. There's something about him. He seems like he's got an ego to fit the planet.
Absolutely. Mm. I feel like he would be serious about it. I feel like he would like, listen, all right, let's do it. Let's get it. Come on. Let's get this scene done. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I like that kind of enthusiasm.
Yeah. He's too, whatever. He earned his $20 million per movie, but then he would go not pay taxes on any of it. That's
right. Exactly. You go out to dinner with him while you're filming a movie and he's like, oh, you going to pitch in for your sandwich? And I'm not going to pay the tax on it.
Yep. Yeah. I'm not paying taxes.
It's a long way to go for that joke.
Screw
it.
Man.
I loved it.
Robert Downey Jr. has one of my favorite little bits on their Wikipedia page ever that I've ever seen.
What's it say?
And he has a section called religious beliefs where it says that Robert Downey Jr. describes his religious beliefs as Jewish Buddhist. Okay.
Jubu
is reported to have consulted astrologers and was previously interested in Christianity and Hare Krishna. He's playing the field, guys.
Yes.
He's
like, right.
I hear you, man. Just like, what do you believe in? Everything.
He's dining at the religion buffet.
Yeah. I think he believes religion in late career MCU money is what he believes in. Big fan.
Yeah.
So things that grossed me out, there were a couple, but the one that really won for me, let's see if you got, I'll play the thing.
You waxed your anus. Gross.
All right. What do you think there?
I do remember something being gross, and I can't remember what it was.
I mean, I'll tell you the runner-up.
Open-air prison toilet?
That is pretty gross, but not on the list. I don't like a surveillance van full of people. Right. That's pretty gross to me.
Did it happen in the Roy Willie's fat-free menu scene?
No, it happened while he was... I'll give you a hint. He was talking to the yokel locals at the swamp about where, giving him instructions on what to do.
Oh,
there you go. I'll just play it.
Spit man.
Yeah. Listen to that. Listen to the splatter it makes. Ugh.
Oh, yeah. That was good. That was good.
ADR. Fully worth
that. All I hear that every day of my life.
It's really foul. I don't like it.
Yeah.
So that's what grossed me out. If anyone was wondering, it's really gross.
I'll tell you what made me laugh, and I shouldn't have.
Please tell me it's Robert Downey Jr. getting out of a car feet first through the window. Please tell me it's that. No.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Okay. All right. What do you got?
But I'm going with Deputy Heart Attack who was going down the plane. Okay, over actor, settle down.
Yeah.
Right.
Settle down, chest burster.
What happened to him? Did he end up getting out or what was the deal there?
I don't know. He was having a pretty bad heart attack in the plane. I'm assuming that his heart literally exploded because he was
I think we see him on a stretcher in a subsequent scene.
Maybe he made it.
Maybe he did.
Yeah.
But that was
bottom line, I didn't care enough about that.
Right. I'm trying to remember. Was he used as a let's feel bad for Wesley Snipes because he's unhooking himself, but he's going to help guy selflessly kind of thing? Or no?
Exactly. I kept waiting for that.
It?
Yeah. I remember.
I was like, oh, we got it. We got to hit the note of a guard who is hurting or is in severe medical trauma. Like in the first
stress.
One.
Yeah.
I also don't think your glasses arm. What is that called? One of your glasses, the parts over your ear. Do you have a name for those?
Yeah.
The
Yeah, the arm of her arm glasses.
Right?
Yeah.
Is that what they're called? All right. Well, whatever it is.
It's called arms, yeah.
I just feel like that thing.
They're hugging your face right now. They're going.
That thing was magical. My gosh, you could get through
anything. Oh, I know. The big fat, like, because you got to think at the end of one of those, they've got that big circular thing that the screw has to go into to connect to the rest of the frame of the glasses. How do you wedge that into the little tiny hole on a pair of handcuffs?
I contend you don't. I think they cheated.
I say don't either.
Yeah. Yeah. What if you have plastic glasses? No, you're done.
Right. You're done. You're out. Yeah, you're already out. Good thing your plan involves some guy's metal ones, I guess.
I love that the movie didn't trust us to follow that Wesley Snipes stole that guy's glasses arm, so they had to make sure we saw a scene of that guy
12 times
to read a book in bed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that made me laugh.
They showed that scene. They showed
where's
that
the arm
scene
of my glasses? They're not even in the case. Oh, I better just go to bed like my wife told me to.
I'm just going to read this book with this one arm glasses.
I am getting on board with Scott that this is not a good movie.
I mean, it's not. Yeah. It's not. It's not as good as the last one.
No, for sure.
The last one is a great, I think, still pretty great movie. I think this has potential written all over it. And there are moments where I'm like, all right, we're having a good time here. I just think the overall execution is a bummer.
You know? Yeah, it's just like I said, they spent too much time worrying about hitting the right notes and you know, connecting the dots, and just not enough time character developing. I mean, I wanted to care about Wesley Snipes' character, and they tried to drop a couple of background character elements, but it just fell flat.
Is it too difficult for us to care, you know, to both want Wesley Snipes to get away and prove his innocence, and we want Tommy Lee Jones to catch him? Is it difficult in a situation like that? Because in The Fugitive, we did want Harrison Ford to get away. We wanted him to escape.
Yeah, because we knew he was innocent.
And this we knew he was innocent.
Yeah, and this one we didn't know for a long time.
Once again, paint by numbers. The way you get there is by establishing the mini boss and the actual bad guy, and having Tommy Lee Jones figure that out too. So that all of his energy can be directed the right direction.
In the stupidest way, with the stupidest plan ever.
It was pretty dumb, but I guess what I'm saying is maybe don't have to have that formula. Why don't you just have him go after a genuine bad guy?
Yeah.
You're the U.S. Marshal Service. Not every one of your arrests are going to be somebody you can shake hands with on the steps.
That'd be a spinoff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But don't you think a lot of it is solved if Robert Downey Jr.'s character is just a little more sympathetic, like just a little bit,
just a little more.
Because like when they first meet him, you're like, oh, they all hate that guy, and then he does something really cool, like he gets out of cuffs, and you're like, oh, okay, they're gonna make him cool. No, they are not. Nope. The rest of the movie, they will never make him cool again.
Yeah, and I think that was part of why I didn't like how his arc went, because they didn't earn that at the end.
That
friendship and how much
of that was because Robert Downey Jr. just hated the whole experience.
Good point. Yeah, yeah. Do I have to be here? Fine.
He says like it was the worst thing he's ever worked on. Like he hated getting up in the morning to go and work on U.S.
Marshals. I feel like they probably all went, feelings mutual, pal. Yeah.
And they were always like, what's that snorting sound in the other room? What's going on over there? There's probably a lot of that going on. Who knows? But
if I have to look at Wesley Snipes' stupid wig one more time.
I mean, because it's smack when you do this kind of thing, it's risky. It's like, well, the first one had Harrison Ford, one of the biggest stars in the history of stars. Yeah. This one does not have that. It's a whole different thing. It's a spinoff, if you will. And off we go to do our spinoff. And that's dangerous. That's like doing direct to the video version. Well, like we were talking about Transporter 4 is like some unknown dude. Well, you're out of Statham. Yeah. If you're out of Statham, don't make another one. And this feels like that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, but we got Tom Lee Jones coming back in the sequel. So, I mean, it makes sense that this would, you know.
Oh, but I think you misspelled spinoff. You spelled it sequel, which is it's weird.
That was his typo.
Yeah, it's a typo.
I've decided everybody's right. That's my theme of this episode. Whatever you say about this movie, you are correct.
Now, I was hoping for a real controversial one like we did with Minority Report is still like the biggest.
Oh, y'all want me to talk about weird.
Let's talk about that. Yeah.
You want to talk about weird themes and elements? Everything's in an effing box in this film. Everything that needs to be a mystery is in a box. It's like, oh, here's a suit. Here's a case with something in it. Here's something else with something in it. is
in the, in the old folks boxes. Home, they're the literally boxes. Looking into boxes, each with one old person in it.
individually wrapped old person boxes.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the guy ironing his shit in the bathroom? What was that
in
about?
The bathroom. Yeah. No, I really wanted. I'm sorry.
His shit's not bad enough.
I really want to chew on what Brian Dunaway just said. There's a scene where they go to investigate Marie for the first time, and she lets them in. Just stupid move. Do not do that. Mm-hmm. And she is an artist, I guess. And everything that she's drawn is on the walls in little boxes. Their mm-hmm. frames are mostly square or rectangular. And that was so interesting. And the movie's like, see all these boxes? And then it does nothing with it. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
And then he goes to beat Sarge, which I would have loved to know more about Sarge.
Yeah.
Wesley Snipes' character goes. And he's got humidors and cigar boxes and P.O. boxes.
All these lockers. All these lockers there made of wood. Yeah.
All of his pipes are in boxes. I'm like, and I said, no, Brian, don't do it. Don't bring up the boxes. You remember the water analogy that everybody gave you shit for.
But like you're an artist, Brian. You understand that when you're trying to make art, right? That sometimes people want this like consistent theme that they're seeing. They want, like you just feel that like you put out, like, and if you study artists, right, they have their things, they have their palette or their form or whatever. And so like it makes sense that a movie like this is being made by a director, Stuart Baird, and he's going to say with the cinematographer, we're going to do a thing. It's going to be visually memorable, right? But it also
F with some people.
Yeah, it doesn't have a purpose, this thing.
aren't you guys a super fan for Major League? Who is in this group that
loves Major League? That's Randy Lowe. Yeah,
I didn't know Wesley Snipes was in Major League. Do you know
that? Oh, God, he's such a huge part in the
You
in
haven't
that, right?
seen Major League.
I have, but it's been
like
ages. I guess it's been too long. We got to finally get that done. Get that in here and get that going.
Yeah.
Little Behringer.
Actually, I have more emotional investment in the character in Major League with Wesley Snipes than I do here. I just
any
other Wesley Snipes role.
Yeah.
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 Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I just saw a picture of Corbin Burnson from that, and that is not the same human.
I would like a super cut of every scene in every movie where there's somebody down the hall that comes out of a door. Or is behind something and comes out and goes, what the hell is it? Boom, it gets interrupted right in between.
Right, and then ducks back in.
And then ducks back in because we had that guy here. He was great.
That super cut would be too long.
What the hell is all?
It'd be a 10-hour, one of those 10-hour YouTube supercut movies.
Right. My first and most prominent laughing and memory of that scene, of that type of trope, is from Ghostbusters when the cleaning lady's in the hall after they blow up her cleaning cart.
Oh, yeah.
And she comes out and goes, what the hell is... And ever since then, I love watching.
You should do it. Your job is to go find that stuff.
What the hell scenes? Yeah.
You get it done.
Make it your mission.
Yeah. It's my mission.
We support you in your mission, truly. Also, I think Robert Downey Jr. character is bad at this. He got ganked twice by Snipes, twice overpowered and took his gun. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, because Snipes is actually a very physical character here, and he does get the hand up occasionally. Like they had like a straight up fight, and I'm like, there's no way Tommy Lee Jones takes Snipes out like that.
Oh, there's no way. Yeah, there's no way Snipes would have kicked his ass.
Yeah, I mean, U.S. Marshals get a good bit of training and, you know, some, you know, physical training. They got to keep up with and stuff. But there's no way you'd have a special agent who is, you know, essentially a murder machine.
What was that? Was it like a wheat silo or something? What was that stuff?
Yeah, it looks like a corn wheat silo or something. Yeah. By the way, those Chinese could not have been more. And I'm assuming they're Chinese. They kept referring to everybody that was Asian in this film as Chinese. That they were watching that fight and they were just like, yeah, okay, high five. High five. two dumb Americans fighting in our grains. High fives over here.
It reminded me.
Stop it? Nope.
It reminded me of Witness when.
The silo scenes.
Silo Witness, scene. Yeah. For whatever reason, that came up.
Now that would be a spinoff.
Mm-hmm. But one of my worst fears would be somebody holding my face down in some grain and not letting me go.
Great. Oh. Mm. I was horrible. Curious about that. Could you breathe?
I mean, you breathe.
I would think so. Right?
No.
Aerated?
No.
Aerated?
Why not? No.
Hey, Randy,
your teeth so that you're not inhaling grain, but I think you could still breathe.
Yeah, I would think so.
Let's try it.
Let's try it.
One big lung full of grain dust and you're dead.
Yeah, see, grain dust can be an issue.
Yeah, because you're aspirating on the worst possible tiny molecule bullshit. You're gonna
right.
Well, I mean, if you have a gluten allergy, sure.
Wait, I'm allergic to gluten.
But why was everybody smoking cigars in this film too?
Because Joey people Pants like a had a cigar.
The guy that wrecked Wesley Snipes had a cigar and dropped it in his crotch and said, "Jesus, yeah. Mary, and Joe shit." Yeah. Which made me laugh.
Wesley Snipes goes to a tobacco store to get his buddy to give him a bunch of money. Like, it was bizarre. That was another thing. Like, I don't understand why this is in this movie constantly.
A lot of people like their stogies, man. They're like, it's Arnold's always calling them stogies, and I don't know something about his generation. Get us a cigar. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys know that Wesley Snipes is Snarps.
Oh, God.
I love that. Yes.
Did you know that he's a serious trained martial artist? Wesley Snipes has the skills to do like seriously good.
I knew
stunts.
He was good at it because there was a lot of talk around the blade time that he was using a lot of his own stuff and doing his own stunts. But I wonder how he's doing now. I mean, he's just spent 60.
This whole movie. I'm waiting for him to do some cool kung fu, and it just never happens.
Yeah, they kind of downplay his physical abilities here, which was weird because he's supposed to be, you know, a badass. We start out with him being a badass and kicking, those guys around. Yeah, but the problem is
if he uses that, then he becomes less sympathetic.
Yeah,
maybe.
Sure.
You know, he's got to be somewhat pacifist with this, just using force only when he needs to.
Suddenly he's Tarzan.
right, exactly. Oh yeah, let's talk about that because he's not only Tarzan, but he's also
Spider-Man,
a genius who's able to figure out exactly how much rope is in that that pulley, so that he doesn't just splat on the ground, or that the rope runs out. Or
that's where the training comes in, right? That's what I'm saying. He's presented sometimes as being this specially super trained guy, and then other times it's like I can't even beat up Tommy Lee Jones. Okay. You say so.
Sound like you don't believe movie. It. Yeah, you don't believe
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
That's fine.
If you say so, movie. All right. But hey, look at this, though. We went from 1993 to 1998. 5 years. Guess what is prominent here? Cell phones. Everybody's got a cell phone, baby. Didn't have it in the 93 Fugitive.
No. Nope.
But not yet prequel. Smartphones. And that's important.
Because no, it is. You got your 93 fat freaking foldies that you're chucking into the lake or whatever.
Yeah.
That was the deal.
Loved it.
It's a dark time in my history. I don't like those old ones.
It was a dark time.
I really don't. I hated original cell phones because they were so damned expensive, the 90s stuff. Yeah. I freaking hated that. Anyway, sorry.
This is apparently also, now this is fuzzy facts, but possibly the last movie on which Snipes paid the government his taxes before he started being a tax evader.
Oh, really?
Was it this one? Really? Oh, then this I apologize. The movie?
Which is fun because, you know, he's a relatively good guy. He's a government agent. Like, I like the idea that he paid his taxes on this one and then he just stopped for years, for like 7 years.
Yeah, he just
straight.
Quit yeah. playing yeah. his taxes. Paying. But did you guys know there were Blockbuster Entertainment Awards? Do you know that was a thing?
Yes.
Yes. Those are fantastic.
I had no idea. He's won two of these. He got one for favorite actor in a horror movie for Blade and favorite duo action adventure. And he shares that with Tommy Lee Jones for U.S. Marshals. So nominated.
Really?
Yeah, he didn't win, but he was nominated.
Not for Woody Harrelson, huh?
White Man Can't Jump got MTV Awards for best on-screen duo, and then let's see, another one for Demolition Man for best villain from the MTV Awards. Yeah, he never won anything.
Guess who won that category at the Blockbuster Awards this year?
Who?
So again, they were
Wesley this year.
Blockbuster Entertainment.
The year of this film, not.
No, we're saying Blockbuster. Does they still do these? This is a Blockbuster.
No. He's talking about 1998.
This year, 1998. This year.
Oh, right. Got
Wesley Snipes and Tommy Lee Jones were nominated for favorite duo action adventure.
Got it.
They were another nominee that didn't win was Mel Gibson and Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon 4.
Oh, they should have given it to them. Although 4 is kind of not great.
So. But I would say the winner that year was possibly one of the best duos in an action adventure movie ever.
Mm.
So, like, you could see why U.S. Marshals didn't win this award.
Yeah.
It was Rush Hour. It was Jackie Chan and Chris Tucker.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. That's well deserved. That's a classic duo that will.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. You ever think we get that back? There was some talk of a new one, I heard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would watch that totally. But Jackie Chan's kind of like, how would he play it now? Because he's. Is he still doing the action?
Yeah, is he unofficially retired or is he still?
I think he still does stuff. But even back then, they were talking about how he was doing less of it. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like it feels like early 2000s is when he stopped being full Jackie Chan and started to be just normal, kind of funny actor guy.
Doing a lot of voiceover work.
Yeah.
Like Can Jackie we talk Chan. About the one trope here real quick?
Yeah.
In this film?
Yeah.
One?
Do we still do it? Do we still do this trope?
I don't know, but I like Dunaway's. One?
One? One.
I mean, Ibbots. I didn't mean Dunaway. Forced, I mean, Ibbots. Yeah.
Anyway, forced vacation trope is not really a vacation. You're going on vacation because it's been too much. Guess what? You're right in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
That's always going to
happen. Do we still do that?
I mean, I feel like we do that in real life sometimes, don't we?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been forced to go on vacation and then had to solve a programming problem while I was on that vacation to save my life and others.
Yeah, your boss said, you know what? You need. I'm putting you on leave right now. Go. Yeah.
You're going Hawaii. I hope that you, when you land, you don't have to solve some kind of programming problem to get back home.
Or on the plane there. Like
here you go. That's right.
Work comes back at you while you're in transit. Right.
Our plane's going to crash here. Let me optimize this database.
I've definitely had an office where my boss said, go on vacation. You have too many days piled up. You need to use these before the end of the year. And then while I was out there, they're like, called me every 10 minutes for questions or problems or issues.
But it wasn't to save your life or nobody else's life, right? Okay.
Still, that's two-thirds of the way to your description there.
That's
pretty close.
Yeah. Two-thirds of a trope.
I can tell you it sucked.
No, I didn't say your vacation was cut short because the person who gave you the vacation, that's more like Mission Impossible. Mission Impossible has that exact trope where every time he tries to go on vacation and he's climbing a mountain and they come flying up a helicopter. Vacation's over, and you know he has to come back and stuff. But that's a different trope.
I don't think they've ever said that. You can't pull me out of retirement.
Never heard him once say that. I don't think the line was ever. Your vacation's over. But I love it.
It's over.
I love it. Come back in the office. We need you right now.
Along those lines, everyone watching this movie compared it to Con Air during that.
That was
right. Like
sure
that. Yeah, it was an airplane film with cons. I mean,
I think Con Air also used the like the joke, these aren't the friendly skies, which they did twice in this movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. We watched Con Air again. I like that movie.
Yeah, I'd rather watch that.
And they had the plane crash. Did they do that in Con Air? Did they have power lines, or am I just like totally getting it confused? Yeah, it
totally
now?
Went through power lines, and because it ended in Vegas, and so it
that's right. Power
lines. This almost felt like a comedy because they were on that road, and it was just tunk 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 tunk.
I loved watching the pilots' reactions. That was some of the best. Those pilots were great. I don't know what actors those were, but those guys did pretty good.
Yeah,
job.
They were all right. I think it said in the trivia some of those guys are real pilots. They for whatever reason both these movies like to hire people in the actual job. Jobs.
Yeah.
Just
do you think that's a little bit of pandering to get just a little bit more audience? It's like, you know what we should do? We should bring in the workers. Yeah. And then they'll tell their families and then they'll, you know, word of mouth.
We'll get 17 more people to see this film than we would have had.
You don't think that's a factor?
Maybe.
Highly inefficient.
I don't know. Right. Maybe they thought, okay, if we get a real pilots, the pilots will get on their comms in a flight to, you know, New Orleans and go.
What if I made a movie that had everybody in America in it? Do you think everybody would come see it?
Yes, actually.
Yes, I do.
So. I think it would be a much more one-to-one scenario. Yeah.
You just have to figure out how to get the fewest number of people who are 1 degree away from everybody in the world.
Right. Yeah.
1 degree apart. I'm going to make that
move. No. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but I did love the truck driver. What were the names? It was Marge. No, it wasn't Large Marge. I'm getting confused with... who was the truck driver and his wife Earl. I think it was Earl
The RV. Yeah.
Yeah. Was it RV? I thought it was a truck. You're right.
Was it a semi or was it an RV?
I thought it was a semi. I thought it was a big semi.
You're right. Yeah. Husband and wife, a semi driving team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great.
I like that she did the universal language of push the rag forward. That's how you know.
She pushed it with her foot. She had the best jobs. Like, do you have any lines here? No. You just have to look.
Just realizing that I should have worked her into my intro because there was definitely more of a family connection to her, the old man in the the old folks. I'm peeking up, looking at the
ocean.
Do we think, regardless of how innocent you are of the original crime, do we think Wesley Snipes' character can get away with hijacking a truck at knife point, shooting a federal officer in the chest, and then at the end, everything's forgiven and he's free?
No. Yeah, that's such a trope, right? I mean, you can't commit crimes along your way, even if you're trying to get away because you're innocent.
Like, oh, all is forgiven. Yeah. Good job, Simon Phoenix.
Yeah. I think there would have been a lot
more.
We've
provided you a lady to kiss. Here you go.
At least, Marie. At least in the first one, they carted him off with cuffs. Harrison Ford's still cuffed, and it felt like he's still kind of doing a perp walk.
Let's get these cuffs off him.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until he got to the car. Like, there's still some protocol there. And then they drive off, and that's all you get. With Snipes, he's like dressed to the nines, has these fancy little circular sunglasses on, and they're up there on the steps as if none of this happened. That was weird.
Wait, did I miss a scene? I thought he ended it with him in the bed. He wanted to go back to bed. Did I miss a part?
Maybe I missed a part. You did definitely missed it. That's after he was hurting on the
pre credits.
Oh, that's right. Because he was walking down. There's like, can we get a statement? And he's like, I remember
that. It's all right. It's a movie that's a little disjointed. You would be forgiven for disjointing it. That's how that works.
Maybe that's when you switched over to watch Con Air.
Yeah,
I probably did. I was like, I haven't seen this movie before. I really watch Con Air.
Kind of in the mood. You guys are making me want to rewatch Con Air.
And Major League.
I've never seen Major. No, I have seen Major League, but I've never seen it more than once. So years and years and years ago. And if we're going to do it here, we should do it. Get it out of the way.
I veto that.
Oh, I thought I thought you wanted to do that movie. No,
I've always vetoed Major League for FilmSack.
Oh,
really? Right. I thought you. That's interesting. I remember incorrectly as well. Okay,
it is a straight comedy, man. We are not good at sacking straight comedy.
No, that's true. That's true.
Is it a straight comedy? I always felt like it had a lot of emotional drama in it. I didn't really feel like when I think of. I think of like stuff like Step Brothers or Old School. That's a full comedy,
Wedding Crashers.
But there's something. There's a lot of emotion and character drama in Major League. Maybe I remember.
I don't remember at all. I just remember being sports farce, and that was about it.
Yeah.
So what do I know?
Charlie Sheen couldn't see. I think I remember seeing that. Yeah. He's a wild thing.
Yeah. Charlie Sheen.
I think I remember that part.
They changed
his
name to Sheen.
Sad moment where he has to put on his glasses.
Yeah, I remember a part where they're stripping away the clothes on the sexy owner. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that was very serious. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very serious.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was a sequel.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Major League 2 exists. That's definitely not a spinoff. All right.
Oh, that's true.
Let's do some clips here. I've got a number of them for this movie, and most of them are, as you might guess, Tommy Lee Jones saying shit. But that's because he's good at it. So now we'll play them. Here you go. Enjoy this first clip, which is him again.
Regular or extra crispy?
Crispy.
I'm sorry. The sound on that clip is too good. He's not. Mm-hmm. He's clearly not in a fight in an apartment. Walker says that.
Let's hear that again.
Regular or extra crispy?
He does sound like he's in a studio.
And the funny thing is, those guys there don't know what in the hell he's talking about.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, half-suit chicken man?
Yeah,
what
they don't know.
What is going on right now?
Yeah, they don't really know. They'd have to make a couple of mental jumps to get back to the fact that he was out there hawking chicken earlier.
Yeah.
Really weird. All right, here's I like the way she says Mark.
Mock.
Yeah. She's supposed to be... They always question, is she there legally? Is she there? I don't know. She works at.
Yeah, they certainly made her bristle when they talked about that. Interrogating her, threatening her.
Yeah.
She works Irene Jacob. She works at the Starbucks and she had to use all of her tip money.
The 1998 Starbucks. I was like, oh man, that is so early on for the popularity of Starbucks. Yeah,
I had to explain to my kid that.
That was a big deal.
It's unusual to us now to see that because it was an unusual thing. There were maybe 100 Starbucks stores or something at the time.
It's ubiquitous now. There's more of those than anything in the world.
It was just opened up in the bathroom of another Starbucks.
Yeah. And what was even more shocking is that the cash price for a cast and x-rays and everything else was, around $120. Because she used her tip money. Yeah, it was like 120 plus 18.
Like they forgot everything they learned about the medical industry from the first film.
That's right.
I
wish Kimball had been there walking around. That would have been great.
I just tried to look it up. There's currently 34,000 Starbucks stores. And I'm not able to go back before 2005. Oh, I know.
It'd be great to see how many there were in 1998. Yeah.
03 is where I see 7,225. And then in 2019, 31,256. That's a lot. That's a huge jump. Mm-hmm. Number of Starbucks coffee shops per capita per 1 million inhabitants. Oh, Monaco? That's funny. The highest is Monaco, 52.8.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, here we go. Found it.
Yeah, what do you got?
1998. Different. It's growing rapidly during these different quarters, but let's just say Q2 1998, there were 1,600
Starbucks. Jeez. Brian, we were talking the other day about how Vegas seemed like they had a lot per capita.
Yeah, right.
So they're actually
at least two or three in every casino. Yeah.
Here's the top cities. This according to 2019 data, so that's the best we have. 241 for New York, 184 for Chicago, Houston 148, San Diego 141, LA 137, Seattle 133. I thought that would be higher. And then Las Vegas 125. 125, but I think they're super concentrated on the strip, all over the strip.
Yeah exactly. Yeah.
What are you laughing at, Dunaway? What did I say?
My notes that I made.
I don't really give a shit. I don't care.
Okay, Las Vegas is a big city.
Yeah.
But 164 Las Vegas Starbucks. That is a lot of Starbucks.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah. Well, no, 125, but it's still less than,
Yeah, but I got to know, are those real Starbucks or is those bullshit Starbucks in the Target stores that always
count.
Get me?
They'll still count.
Yeah. Yeah, they suck. Sorry if you're working at Target Starbucks, but never have my drink.
Look at the amount of money they make now. In 2005, they capped out at $780 million that year. 2018 gross revenue profit, $3.88 billion in profit.
Billion.
Actually, they're down. They were down a billion from the previous year. So a little fluctuation. But
yeah, they're contracting a little bit. COVID helped.
Yeah, COVID helped.
You're probably welcome.
They're doing okay now, though. It says, according to this thing, 64% of Americans age 18 and over drank coffee every day in 2019.
So as with or without Starbucks, just saying.
Yeah, you're right. They still dominate. I mean, there's no question about that. They're freaking huge, but
yeah.
Ah, what there's do you
got? There's a lot of coffee references in this movie too. It's not just Starbucks.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like
drinking the coffee.
Like right up to our most climactic scene in the hospital. You have Tommy Lee Jones facing off against Robert Downey Jr. They both know that the other one knows at this point. Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones is like, want coffee? I'll go get you coffee.
Yep.
Four sugars?
He's just snuck the bullets out of the gun. Right.
Yeah. Peeking around the corner waiting for Robert
expected to do that, like a scene of him like, is he gone? Because that was the worst plan ever. It's like, I know how I get him out. I won't just go arrest him proper. No, I'll catch him red-handed. How will I do that? Well, I'll pull his bullets out of his gun.
Mm-hmm.
Gunman Randy, wouldn't there still be one in the chamber?
In the chamber?
Pull the magazine out?
Probably, yeah. Except all these actors are constantly ejecting whatever they've got in the chamber for no reason. I don't know. Maybe. There might have been one. Maybe Tommy Lee Jones was prepared to take one bullet.
Right.
But it could have easily been put into Wesley Snipes before Tommy Lee Jones came in.
Yeah.
Maybe whatever. I don't know. I'm not a gun expert, but maybe that gun only works with the clip in and there's no.
Maybe.
I don't know.
And by the way, those Glocks are super light. Like you would know instantly when someone handed you one where they'd taken the magazine out. You'd be
interesting.
Yeah. Like that's a super light gun. There's just no way this works, but whatever.
I had a super light gun with my Super Nintendo.
Oh, yeah, the super light gun.
Yeah.
I love the super light gun.
Old school retro jokes.
Yeah,
I like
it. Nicely done. All right, here's a clip. A guy that used the can.
Hey, Got to use the can.
Yeah, he's got to use the can. He's got to get in there.
Can implies enclosed.
I agree. See,
I've never been on a prison plane or in a prison for that matter, so I didn't know if my intro made sense of a guy sitting down to pee. I would think he would stand up to pee, but then he is on a plane, too. I don't know how many turbulence is going on. Well, I stand up and pee when I'm on a plane.
But that's interesting because Ibbitt just said you'd think of a can as an enclosed space. I've always thought the can they're referring to is the actual toilet of wherever.
Is the toilet itself?
Yeah.
I think it totally is, yeah.
Okay. I should make sure I'm not going crazy because that felt like it's something I've always thought.
I've never once thought
anyone
that.
Any one of us Googling right now to see can?
Whatever I have said out loud, I need to use the can. I have never actually thought, what am I talking about?
Yeah.
I've never said I need to use the can.
Oh, you guys are weird. I've said it. I've said I need to use the can, but I always refuse. It was always on a prison plane. I refuse.
I'm way more likely to say I'm going to go hit the head.
I knew you were going to say that because I hate that term the most.
Oh, I do too.
I'm going to go hit the head.
What are you talking about?
Because
the head of your penis? What are you doing in there?
It's the least offensive thing I can think of.
That sounds like the most offensive.
Really? Okay. All right.
Hit the head.
But you know, it's fine.
I wonder what that means.
We all have our pet peeves.
What does it mean, hit the head? What does it even mean?
Yeah, we all have our pet peeves. And Brian Dunaway has all of our pet peeves.
Yeah, all the peeves.
What's wrong with that?
He's pet peeve.
I'm peeve.
Head is a nautical term for a toilet for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nautical head.
Probably because you're going to hit your head if you're not careful.
Right.
Man, that's weird. All right. Here's
maybe that's what they did. Maybe they were like, I'm going to go to the bathroom, but lots of times they hit my head. So they just said, I'm a moron. We hit the head. Is that it?
I think this guy had to go poo-poo, and here's why.
I'm serious. I'm about to explode right here.
I think that's why.
Yeah. He needed to, or he was claiming that he needed to take a dump.
Yeah.
Right.
He had to poo. The claim was poo, is what I think.
Pee-pee-poo-poo.
Bananas.
Bananas, plural.
Oh, yeah. Bananas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I do the New York Times crossword puzzle a lot, and I don't like that. I don't like that clue. Was it split on ice?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like that either. Yeah, what does that mean?
Because technically the bananas are around the ice cream, and it fails. The New York Times never would allow that.
No. Like, who would... Yeah, I thought of you when I saw that, and I went...
Split with ice, maybe.
Yeah.
But even then, it's ice cream isn't ice.
No.
Yeah.
It's iced cream.
Right.
But that's the cream is
not iced cream. Oh, I guess it's
I thought they said slip on ice.
Well, it's literally called ice cream, but the idea is the cream.
But the cream is iced to make it firm.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the cream is the focus, not the ice ever. All right. Here's Captain. The captain said shit.
Shit.
All right. There's that.
We do need a good shit sound clip.
Yeah.
And there was one F bomb in this movie, which I, really appreciate it.
Isn't there more than
Captain?
It was rated R, wasn't it? This movie,
but it's not Bananas Split.
Was this movie R? Why was it R if it was R?
That's a great question.
I mean, it didn't. A PG-13. You're right, and they got their one requisite swear in there. But I swear the previous one was.
It was also PG-13. Both were PG-13.
Really?
That's what you do with sequels.
Thought that was R. Or spinoffs sometimes will do that as well. Get your head up there.
Get your head up there, jack off.
I haven't heard that word in a while. Jack off.
Been a while. But it seems like if you're going to hear that, you may as well hear it from Tommy Lee Jones saying it.
Yeah.
Here's the gumbo comment.
That Chinese fella Ling dropped in some poor old boy's roof and into the bathtub. Looked like a big bowl of gumbo with a bunch of ribs.
I get the picture, Sheriff.
With a bunch of what? Ribs, he was going to say?
A bunch of ribs, gumbo.
Didn't they show a photo of how the kid landed, though, and he was intact? They were looking at photos later on of the two guys that fell out of the plane,
Well, then I don't think that looks like gumbo at all.
No.
He looks like an intact human being.
Right.
Dead, but intact.
Dead, but not gumbo.
I'm dead, not gumbo. put that on my gravestone, please.
Some scrutiny right here.
Yeah. All right. Say the name of the last movie is this scene.
We got a fugitive.
Yeah, you had a fugitive, but now you got a different movie. Make a perimeter.
20, then. That sounds good. And now that should go in all directions now, just like a big
perimeter.
Circle deal, which could start somewhere near.
I love that guy. I love the yokel who can't get his shit together. He was great. Did a good job.
I agree.
Here's some Tommy Lee Jones at his best.
Look, you know, no offense, but we actually work a lot faster. We don't have any help.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Any help?
Help.
Yeah. His sissy pistol.
Get yourself a Glock. Lose that nickel-plated sissy pistol.
Sissy pistol.
Sissy pistol.
That's right. Sissy pistol.
I like that.
Not having any fun here.
I'm not having any fun here. You know how cranky I get when I don't have any fun.
Yeah.
That's where he officially transitions to old man Marshall.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He like up until this point, first movie, this movie, he is getting there. He is approaching retirement, but that's the moment officially. He is now old man Marshall, and he is old man the rest of the movie.
I agree. Downey getting cuffed.
XL-17, Korean, .22 caliber. He found it with his little flashlight.
Hey, what the hell are you doing? Huh?
Huh? What's going on?
Huh?
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 Huh? Huh? All right.
Say.
Here's this again.
I'm Iron Man.
Oof. Oof.
Spit.
So gross. I hate this sound. The sound of a fly and then slapping it. I hate it. I hate it. It makes me
irritated. And the opening note of a Suicide is Painless, the theme of MASH or something right there.
Yeah, what was that? What that was. Weird. Good call, though. Good ear. You're like Tommy Lee Jones trying to find out what the guy in the train station's saying.
Right, exactly. I don't hear an elevator train.
Say it again.
Here's some cool gun sounds. Like, I actually thought this Foley work was good. Just impactful, man.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds just like...
Yeah.
was that him shooting snipes?
Shooting at him at the, or
Cuz it's shooting an orchestra.
It's when he was shooting at Snipes, who had just run away from Robert Downey Jr. in the fight out in the
out in the swamps.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It just sounded good. That's good. Mm-hmm. All right, here's our little Empire Strikes Back moment.
I love you.
Yep, they straight up did it.
I don't remember that part.
I didn't catch that either. Yeah.
Straight up did it. A rat. All right. A rat.
Got a rat. A rat.
Oh, I was hoping you would catch more of that clip, because I think the full line was, we're going to New York. And what are we like? What's in New York? And he says a rat.
He says a rat.
And then I want to say pizza rat. Yeah, obviously,
pizza rat
is the rat in New York.
That is the correct deal. So a lot of times in these movies, I find these scenes where I'm always surprised, like they left someone farted on set and they just leave it in because they weren't thinking. I found one of those. So enjoy.
Do I take it this visit is not to deliver our fugitive?
Not with the horse shit you've been handing us.
Excuse me.
See?
I heard two there, because the chair squeaking sounded like a fart.
It does a little bit.
Or an elch or something, yeah.
Do I take it this visit is not?
That's true. I didn't notice. I didn't notice. But it was nice of him to say, excuse me, at the end. You know?
Yeah, it's very nice.
I appreciated that. All right. I wrote these poor people.
United States Deputy Marshal, ma'am, are you alone?
Yes.
These poor old folks.
I'm very sad about it too. Please come in, talk a while.
United States Deputy Marshal Auctioneer.
Yeah.
And Federal Express spokesman.
That's amazing. All right, here's a motion sickness moment.
Tetralazine for motion sickness.
For motion.
Great. Who's going to clean all this up?
Yeah, and pay for all the freaking Benadryl you knocked all over the floor, you a-hole. All right, here's one for. Oh, this is a smack in the face. It's pretty good. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That's when he first got grabbed by Downey? I don't remember.
Mm-mm, don't do it. Mm-mm.
Don't. Something like that. All right. It's time for this film sack checklist here. Oh, I just knocked some more peanuts over. Hold on a second. Here it is.
Whoa. The peanut saga lasts two episodes.
It's like a two-week continuation, this story. Yeah. With the
I heard the wrong word. I heard private parts.
No.
Yeah.
You heard penis. No. I did not knock my penis over again. I'll do it later. Let's see. Film sack checklist. Wesley Snipes, because he did a little sniping, not a lot, but a little.
You can
feel the sweat in the location shoot. Yes, that is true.
Oh,
Ain't nobody want to see a dead guy in the shower? Check.
Oh, that poor guy. All dead, shrumped up.
I don't want to be that guy ever. No, if I have my, whenever I have my heart attack or whatever takes me out, I don't want it to be on the shitter or in the shower.
It's going to be embarrassing no matter what. I feel like the same thing. I'm like, they're going to find my body. I just stopped worried about it.
Yeah. That's true. You know what? At that point, who cares, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want my kids or my wife to have to deal with it, but, you know.
What do I care? I'll be dead.
That's a good point. All right. Soundtrack, great. Oh, no, we got to do Connection Star Trek. There's more in this one, I think, right?
Yeah. So, you know, this has largely the same cast as last week. So we have Daniel Roebuck again. You know, he's Bobby Biggs. And like I said last week, he was in one episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation. But we got two big hits here that are new. So first, our director, Stuart Baird. He directed Star Trek Nemesis, yep. Which I think is a pretty good movie. I remember at the time, Scott felt a little let down.
No, you got it wrong. Opposite. It's one of my favorites, and I think it's underrated. I love that movie.
Okay. Very Nemesis good. Wrong. Very good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. Stuart Baird also cast himself in Nemesis. He has a bit role as a computer voice in Nemesis.
Yeah.
But our biggest connection by far is the great Jerry Goldsmith. He... he's got so many Star Trek credits that I just want to stick with the big ones where he composed the music for a film. He composed the music for Star Trek: The Motion Picture, for Part 5, The Final Frontier, for First Contact, and Insurrection, and Nemesis. And
TNG's sort of like, theme, which is famous. So yes,
he's basically the most fundamental music composer for Star Trek. So
yeah,
we're all up in this connection.
This is a good one. This is a big one this week. For the record though, for reals, Nemesis is rad, and it's the first time you'll ever see Tom Hardy. He's all skinny. Deanna Troi and Riker get married in the first 10 minutes. That's cool.
Right.
Cool.
On a pirate ship, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. The problem with this movie is it came out right the same weekend as one of the Lord of the Rings movies, and it just got buried. But it's better than people remember. It's very good. All right. Well, there's enough of that. Let's move on now to the soundtrack grade. I give an S for roughly the same as the last one. Although I will admit Goldsmith's, you know, he's a master. He's good.
He's good. And I would say this is better than The Fugitive. That's like one of the few ways that it's better. I have two things for this whole movie. Tommy Lee Jones is even better in this movie than the first one. And Jerry Goldsmith does the music, and it's solid. This is a great score from beginning
to end. Yeah, and it's less TV-ish, which I appreciate. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that last week, as I recall that whole week ago that we talked about.
That's what I recall.
Whole week ago, yeah.
Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. And I think this week we'll start with Randy.
U.S. Marshals. A kind of innocent man is on the run from a federal cop who's too old for this shit and has to deal with his even older and too older for this shitter older lady boss. But this time the fugitive has a girlfriend and all of their crimes are forgiven in time for the final kiss.
Aww. It's adorable. Brian Dunaway. Take us out of the saccharine moment and give us something less adorable.
U.S. Marshals, this franchise sequel spinoff is going down in flames. Quick, put your head between your knees and kiss your circle deal goodbye. Righteous. Very righteous.
Circle deal.
Then hold on. They had to unlock and relock all of them at the same time.
Bummer. Hanging upside down.
By the way, in the trivia, it is made very, very clear that that is not realistic. Prisoners are not to be restrained on planes. That is like apparently a rule.
That true? I didn't know
makes
that.
Makes sense.
Prisoner transport.
That's because most prisoners aren't Hannibal Lecter. Well, that's the reason why we don't do it like that.
Hold on a second. How do you do it otherwise? You just they all mind their manners and just sit still. And,
yeah, you got a gun. You got a freaking what are they gonna do? Where are they gonna go?
It just feels like you would block people in. I don't know why.
Like at least but have them handcuffed or something.
Why? You don't do it. You don't put them when they're in prison. You don't have them walking around in handcuffs.
Well, no, they're handcuffed as their jail cell in space.
Yeah, but where are they going? They're in a plane. Where are they going?
Up front to take command of the thing and strangle a guard or, I don't know, other stuff. Or kill each other, hurt each other, you know.
Why don't they just do that in the prisons?
Elbow a window?
Because they can't go to the warden and then steer the prison somewhere else.
Yeah, they can't fly, fly the prison into the Potomac.
So you're
or whatever.
Thinking all prisoners are pilot, got their pilot's license too?
Sure.
Yeah. Where they gotta go?
I mean, what if they could break a window with an elbow and suck everybody out or something?
Yeah, have you ever tried to elbow? Yeah.
Yeah, but if you're a big, tough prisoner, Lyle Zato looking asshole, you could do it.
Dunaway, what are you so excited about right now?
I love getting. I haven't had Scott this riled up in a long time.
I know, it's been a bit. I enjoy it. Keep it coming.
Not since the great spinoff sequel debate of 20 minutes ago.
That's right. All right. We got Brian Ibbett's Twitter post. Brian, take it away.
U.S. Marshals, everything you loved about The Fugitive has been removed to make this film.
Perfect.
Zing. Oh, you kind of nailed it. Yeah. Don't just say film, say spinoff.
Spinoff, yes.
Yeah, got to get the right words.
I should have actually ended with that, yeah.
Yeah, nicely done. Here's this. Oh my gosh, it's the alternate titles. It was almost called Get Snipes Tax Evasion Edition or Iron Man Helps Harvey Dent Do Stuff. That's a pretty good title. I'd go with that. Yeah. Of course, in the end, he screwed him, but whatever. It's anyway.
Semantics.
Semantics.
There's Harvey Dent.
Here's your emails for the week. One, in fact, from John. He is Kojak70 on Twitter, and he wrote in, says, longtime caller, first-time listener, or something like that. Went through your archives, and unless you sacked these movies between episodes 333 and 380, you haven't done them.
Oh, okay. I love that there's like a memory gap that will never. Yeah.
And he doesn't care if it's outside of his listening. We haven't done them. Anyway, first nomination is the sci-fi 1985 film Daryl.
With all the dots.
Yep, with all the dots. Awesome. It's got David S. Hubbins in it and a freaking SR-71. How cool is that? Okay, we haven't watched that, so far you're good.
Yeah, good job.
David
good job.
Hubbins.
Yeah, next one is Gotcha, an American comedy action movie from also 1985. It's got Goose in it.
You have Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, yeah. And it seems to recall watching, or he watched this fondly in the late 80s whenever it was on. And lastly, 1984 movie called Electric Dreams.
yes.
It's got Princess Irulan from Dune. Virginia Madsen. She's in everything. Yes.
I love that he's been doing all the characters, and I think he meant David St. Hubbins instead of David S. Hubbins.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. See, apparently the rights for this movie were lost in contention for years, but now it's been released on Blu-ray and apparently on Prime. Look forward to your future episodes, John.
And it's got an incredible soundtrack by Giorgio Moroder and a dude from Human League. The theme song. It's a really good, score and a really horrible movie that is perfect for Film Sack.
As we've said before, 1984, the year, is perfect for Film Sack. Like, it's pretty much anything.
Maybe the best year. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I've got it down. It's $2 on Amazon Prime. And I do always note these things. I just want to say, if you really, really want to make a case for us with a movie suggestion, join our Patreon. That is it is the best possible place.
Yeah, we've pretty much stopped listening to other people.
Yeah.
We have others. We definitely get all kinds of suggestions from all directions. I'm just saying, I look at that Patreon every day. Yeah.
Good to hear what they have to say in there. I agree. They're good folks. Real quick here, that movie. Oh, yeah, you're right. You already said it was rentable, but not currently streaming on the service as a free
it's $2
thing. Yeah, it's no big deal.
That was always on HBO in the late 80s, by the way.
I don't remember this at all. Like, no memory of it.
So to watch it for free, it is dead back to when you was a teenager at your mom's house on HBO. Yeah, there you go.
Virginia Madsen's still around, right? She's still working? Yeah, there she is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good for her.
I'm glad she's working.
Keep those emails coming, by the way. We would love to hear more from you. Like John, be like John and send more in. If you have not yet done so, do check out that Patreon, as mentioned before, patreon.com/filmsack. Get in there, and every week you'll get an ad-free experience, including bonus content every single week, a monthly bonus show, and more. Art in the mail, all sorts of stuff. Go check out and see what level is for you at patreon.com/filmsack. Our next movie, I feel like we just did one of these, but we didn't. Transporter 3 is on the docket. We're finishing it out. We committed. Yeah,
technically the last one of these we're going to see, right?
Yeah, yes, we're not like, seeing 4. 4 is dumb.
This is the end of our hot action movie summer, the last week of August, last week of summer, and we're going to watch Transporter 3. And we're going to, you know what? We're going to love it, guys. I believe we're going to love it.
Really? I don't know if I believe that, but I'll have faith in your belief and try to be there. And then
I believe
then
that you believe it.
Maybe my belief will be strengthened by your belief. But whatever, it's a way to finish it out. We did the trilogy. It's all you can ask. So that's next week right here on FilmSack. In the meantime, FilmSack.com is your place to go. And while you're at it, send us those emails, FilmSack@gmail.com, and find us on Twitter @FilmSack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yes, I am.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Regular or extra crispy.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.